Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.
This is AutoLine After Hours with guest host Scott Burgess. That's me. Episode 323 for March 11th, 2016. VW dehorned. Hi, I'm Scott Burgess. I'm filling in for John and Gary, and one of the few people that's possible to fill in for two people at the same time. Welcome to AutoLine After Hours in the afternoon. We have three great guests with us today on this panel that we've decided to form. First is Elisa Priddle with Motor Trend.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Next is Bob Gritzinger with Ward's Auto.
Good to be here.
And last but not least is Todd Lassa with Automobile Magazine.
Hello, Scott.
All right. And for those that are counting, Elisa, Todd, and myself have all been the Detroit editor at Motor Trend. It's about the last 15 years in a row.
So, yeah, and Bob and I have both been news editor at Auto Week before that.
Right.
And Bob and I have both been at Ward's, and Scott and I have both been at the Detroit News. So we are a very incestuous group.
Do we give the lineup as I did before? So I left Auto Week for Motor Trend. Bob replaced me. I left Motor Trend for Automobile. Scott replaced me there. Scott left Motor Trend for Yahoo Autos, and Lisa replaced you.
And I will be leaving Yahoo Autos due to a cut in about a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then apparently I'm replacing McElroy. And so
that's here at AutoLine, there you go.
One of the things that
I think you just found out about that, didn't you?
It seems like that's I'm missing a Motor Trend Detroit editor job on my resume. That's
yeah,
what's missing.
That's what you've done wrong.
Lots of people are. And in case you notice, there's a little sign that's down here, and these are a series of signs. As I'm kind of we're going through the show, I'm just going to be flipping.
I think is what you're.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking for work, I have to admit, so I'm going to do it 8 Mile style. But first, I would love to offer a sincere apology to Mike Austin and all of the Autoblog team, probably the best automobile team around, because I turned down that job to take the job at Yahoo Autos, which then evaporates April 16th. So I'm very, very sorry. But the first thing up for talk, let's talk about VW and Horn getting fired and Carb messing with them some more. And Todd, what's your take?
Oh, let's talk about VW, shall we? I mean, that's always a good discussion. Well, I mean, Michael Horn, as Elisa pointed out yesterday when we were talking about it, how did he stay 6 months after the whole Dieselgate scandal erupted? And obviously, from reading the dealership press, if you will, he was a favorite of the dealers, at least. Yesterday's announcement that he was leaving, officially he's leaving, not fired, but, you know, draw your own conclusions.
Somehow he left.
By mutual agreement, and he left to pursue other interests.
Right.
Never heard that before.
Yes. At Yahoo Autos, or?
Yeah, that would not be the place to pursue those dreams.
No, right.
And yesterday also, it was announced, reported in the New York Times, that that German prosecutors who are looking at this whole Dieselgate scandal have added 11 names to the list of people they are investigating.
Not sure if it's 11 or 17.
No, they go from 6 to 17.
I thought they added 17. So
No. They had
a bunch.
They had 6. They're now up to 17. Because of German law, they do not release the names, so we don't know who they are. They say that none of them are current or former board members. So apparently they're still not investigating.
So Leonard Cohen's still safe.
And Piak, apparently.
Yeah, Piak. So. Yeah. Elisa, how long is this story going to last?
Until Volkswagen is almost dead in this country?
Almost dead again in this country.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing that removes an automaker from a market.
It's incredible. The damage done.
Right. And as Todd was saying, Horn presumably was allowed to live this long after the scandal because the dealers loved him. With him going, the dealers are frantic. They thought that he was the one guy who was actually sort of advocating on their behalf when Germany didn't understand what happens in this country. And so, I mean, they already have vehicles they can't sell. And he was the one guy who was trying to make things a little better with different incentives when they sold gasoline-powered vehicles and that kind of thing. And, I mean, they are got to be some of the most worried business people in this country.
They have two kinds of vehicles they can't sell. They've got the diesels, which by law they can't sell. They're just not on the market. And then they've got the cars that they're having trouble selling. I mean,
the
dealers liked Horn, but for two years, sales in the U.S. went down when everybody else was seeing sales increase.
I think by April it's going to be about the best time ever to go buy a Golf.
Right.
That you'll get a fantastic car, and they'll be giving them away.
Mm-hmm. The regulators are still sort of piling on. I mean, the CARB has approval from the EPA to limit. They're saying the fix doesn't work. Yeah. Right. The fix is in on the fix.
Right. There is no fix, essentially, at this point, and many months later.
The last thing, and this is just an observation, I thought after the story broke, you know, it's horrible news, and it's really going to hurt them. And then through the end of last year, I thought Volkswagen had managed the problem very well from a PR standpoint. And when they got to the Detroit show, they just seemed to have screwed it up even more. And ever since that Detroit show, it's just been nonstop. Whether or not it was the comments of, well, maybe it wasn't really that bad, or maybe we really didn't know about it. It was just one of those things where you're like, oh, my God, just shut up.
And then they got hit by the prankster in Geneva.
Yeah.
Which I missed, unfortunately. But it was a British comedian who... a year ago, dumped money on Sepp Blatter at a FIFA press conference.
That's too weird.
At Geneva, he walked onto the set of the Volkswagen onto the stage of the Volkswagen press conference, which was run, by the way, by someone I've never heard of, some German engineers or marketing guy. Several steps below where you usually see the announcement.
You get the big business report there.
Yeah. And he had a little box in his hand, and he said loudly to the audience in English while the press conference is going on in German, oh, I'm just going to put this under the car. Nobody will notice. It's just some fake software or something like that, and nobody will notice.
Called it a cheat box, I think.
He says,
I'm just going to install the cheat box, and don't worry, they know about it. But as long as people don't know about it, it's fine.
And then they started carrying him away. And meanwhile,
they did grab him.
Meanwhile, they grabbed him,
after he shimmied under the car.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was at a Trump rally. They didn't beat him up or anything and throw him out. But they grabbed him and walked him out gently. And meanwhile. The German executive said in English, "Oh, the car is perfect. You do not need to fix it," or something like that. That executive did not know the irony of his own comments.
Right.
The thing I'd like to say about Michael Horn is that I sat down with him at the New York Auto Show. I think it was 2 years ago, just shortly after he had replaced Jonathan Browning as the chief of North American operations for VW. And my impression is that he didn't get it. Now, maybe he learned from the dealership since then, but the kinds of cars he was talking about that VW would be selling in this country, just exactly what they've been selling all along, which, including diesels, that's not really the market for diesels. Volkswagen has been selling cars to Volkswagen people for so long.
Yeah.
The new Passat made some inroads because it was the right size. It was nicely designed, good car. And so that might have taken some Toyota Camry and Honda Accord sales away. That's what they wanted. But in the end, they were selling mostly to people who had outgrown their GTIs.
Yeah. Right. And the other problem just is that these executives are not contrite. I mean, this was willful deception, and from the top, they just never sound contrite, even when they're apologizing.
Well, Wintercourt had to be kicked out screaming, basically.
Well, they are contrite over the sales. They're very sorry.
Yeah, they're losing sales, yes.
At the L.A. show, Horn did the press conference there and was very contrite.
Yes.
You know, went through the whole thing, and then, you know, walked over and was, you know, slammed up against the side of the new Dune. And, you know, proceeded to repeat everything that he had just said on the stage to anybody who wanted to ask. So that, you know, it felt like at that point, you're right, they were managing it to that point. I mean, as much as you can manage something like Watergate, you know.
It's funny, if you look at Volkswagen's history in the United States, I think it all goes back to that. I was thinking about the fact that when you hear the stories about how Toyota and Nissan, for example, as Datsun, made it big in this country. They had, there was Mr. K from Nissan, for example,
right,
who in the late 50s, early 60s, drove around the country and talked to people and learned what they drove and why, you know, what they were like and so on. And that's how they entered this country. Volkswagen almost came here by accident. The Brits saved them after World War II. They sold a few cars here. They were the oddball car and embraced as such in the United States in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
And they never really did, as far as I know, the type of, and they had great advertising, of course. That went
right,
a long, yeah, long way.
Yeah.
Some of the most classic advertising in all of advertising, that's just cars. And so their peak years were still during the Beatle years, during the late 60s and early 70s in the U.S. They still haven't matched those numbers.
All right. So at our current pace, we're going to get through three topics.
Okay.
So I want to go ahead and move this along.
Back with Volkswagen.
This morning.
We're done with that.
This morning, Jeep threw out its Moab concepts.
Yeah.
Bob, you were there. What did you think?
Well, I see a whole bunch of future product there. I'd love to see a Renegade pickup truck, first of all. I mean, did you see that thing? It was built on a European model Renegade, so it was a diesel, first of all. A bed on the back of a stretched Renegade.
Did that look like a tiny Avalanche or what?
No, it's like, you know, think Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And this is going to be mm-hmm. that niche. So
yeah, that's a
that
niche,
one
sure.
I loved, and I you know, I suspect they'll turn that around and do something with it. Every, you know, I heard a lot of positive comment about that. And then there was we saw the pickup truck bed on the Wrangler, so now we know exactly how that's all going to play out. And then there was the crazy stuff, you know, the Hellcat engine in that, what did they call it? The Trailcat.
The Trailcat, yeah.
That just should be made. Should be made right now.
Well, it is. It is drivable. They did admit that they haven't taken it off-road yet. Because you need 707 horsepower off-road.
In a Grand Cherokee, that engine, when you can build something crazy like that. But,
And I've been to these year after year. And so these are some of the most fascinating designs. The pork chop vehicles that they've done on lightweighting. Mark Allen, I think, is just a fantastic designer.
Yeah,
and it shows you to come out with four or five concepts every year something really...
Seven this year, last year.
And the most bizarre one was that...
The
FC-150 with the cab over design, right? And they took a 1960 model.
Yeah, here it is, right here.
And they dropped it
in Colorado. They preserved it, so they kept all the scratches and dents and everything, but they put it onto, I think, a last generation Wrangler chassis.
05. I had a Tonka truck
Wrangler
like that when I was 4 or 5
years old. And they put in things like, you know, power steering and brakes for safety.
But they kept the big CB radio. It's about the size of an amplifier in there.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I've always wanted to do, and because the Eastern Jeep Safari is always the same time as the New York Auto Show, I've never been able to go on that Jeep Safari with Jeep. And everybody says that it is the greatest thing ever to be with Jeep because they drive all these concepts all around Moab, and they'll be going off-roading with these things, and everybody just runs up to you all the time
You know.
Well, and this was great because they fired up the Hellcat, of course.
Right.
And it was, you know, the exhaust notes were filling the room. Yeah. And then when it ended, Mark Allen had jumped into the FC-150 and turned that on.
I-6 4-liter in that thing. Yeah.
So it still had the original engine.
I
missed it this morning, but I have to say, this is just so further proof that FCA has become the Jeep Motor Company.
And they are. Yeah.
And really, they're...
JMC.
They're maybe their only way forward now, and considering how they're in the hottest markets, the hottest segments. If you look at several different models in different segments, they're just hitting it all. Maybe everything else should just become kind of niche models on the periphery. I'm talking about Chrysler and Dodge and Fiat and so on.
Well, they're up 24% globally. Is that what they said?
19% it was in the 20s.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just steaming
along. And last year they
along.
Did that for the full year. They were up over 20%.
And Alisa, you were talking before the show that there's other FCA news coming out as well, that they may be joining another hot segment.
Exactly. When I was in Geneva, Mark Ioni said that Ram needs a midsize or compact midsize, whatever you want to call it, pickup. They need to expand the Ram range. And he said that that's something that they want to have. The big question right now is whether to go unibody or body on frame, which is something they've been grappling with for years. And that's so a project that's been on again, off again. But last week he said he wants, he definitely needs this. I talked to Manley about it today, and because he's now in charge of Jeep and Ram.
Right.
Mike Manley. And so he said, he's really excited. Now, it'll come sometime after Jeep gets its pickup. And that pickup doesn't come until after the next gen
Wrangler,
which is late 2017, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So that pickup after that. He wouldn't talk about whether or not the Ram and the Jeep would share the same platform. But that's probably because they also don't know if it's going to be the Ram will be body on frame or unibody. But still, they believe that segment is big enough to come in. And Manley says even coming in as a latecomer doesn't matter. He thinks there's enough business there. So so that's an exciting development for Ram if they're really going ahead with that.
I can't believe how wrong the pickup builders were when they got rid of all their midsize pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Ranger.
And
talk about throwing money away.
They weren't wrong at the time because they had let those trucks get so old that there was virtually no fuel economy.
That's an excellent point.
Yes.
And
the Ranger. It was
and at the time you could buy a full-size pickup truck for not a lot of money. Yeah. And everybody who wanted a pickup truck wanted one of those. Now, they've gotten so big, they've got cartoonishly big, that the new Chevy and the GMC are out, and they're about the size of a 3 or 4 generation old full-size pickup truck.
Yeah.
But so I wonder, I don't know if you got any indication of this, Alisa, that a few years ago when Ford said, no more Ranger for the U.S., Chrysler was saying, we don't see much of a market for a new Dakota or a new midsize.
Except they wanted a unibody one at that time. That's what they were looking at.
There was some talk about it. But then I think they figured out, I think maybe they looked at Honda.
They couldn't get the price point.
Yeah.
Actually, they said they couldn't do it for the price point they needed to sell it at.
Which is why you'd think if they're going to do it right, if they're going to do it smart, they're going to do a body on frame and maybe share it with that Jeep platform instead of do a unibody.
But it sounds like that decision has not been made.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get better, better towing, better.
I've always thought that too much emphasis is placed on capability of small pickup trucks. That every time you start doing that, then they get bigger. And the problem with small pickup trucks is they get too big and they get too expensive.
Yeah.
I remember a couple of years ago when Colorado had a V8. You don't need that. You need a bed that holds 700 pounds or 500 pounds that it can tow. A snowmobile,
500 pounds.
Yeah. A 2,000 pound towing.
Yeah, the difference between competing with Chevy Colorado, which is selling fairly well, decent numbers, and then competing with the Honda Ridgeline, which we don't know. But if you look at the last numbers when it last sold in this country,
I think the new Ridgeline is going to do much better than the old Ridgeline.
The all new one looks truckier, it should do better.
So before you leave that. There was one more piece of news out there, which is Manley confirming the vehicle that shall not be named, starting production in Brazil end of this year. So the small crossover Jeep.
Yeah, for everybody, this is stuff that we can't talk about, so we'll be bleeping all of Bob out of this.
We can talk about
that. Well, I wasn't there, so I can say, obviously, they're replacing the Patriot and the Compass into one vehicle.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Which they end up with two anyway because they've also already got the Renegade.
Right.
So
but they've
net
said that
change is the same.
For years. Yeah. I mean, that's been in, was in the five-year plan.
Yeah. Right,
the Compatriot.
Right.
Two 5-year plans ago the Compatriot is. I think Frank Marcus takes credit for calling it the Compatriot.
The Compatriot. There
so I'm going to skip the next topic so we don't need to talk about that, and I need to get one more in before the break. One of the things that I've been kind of interested in, Todd disagrees.
Wait a second.
I do not disagree that you're interested in it. I mean, not be interested.
Right now, we're seeing a real renaissance of the compact vehicle segment. Everybody is, it's just one of those things where everything is kind of lined up this way that we have a really great focus that is out there. You got the new Sentra that just is arriving at dealerships, right. I think, in January. The new Corolla, which I think is much nicer than the previous gen.
I was disagreeing on that.
Elantra as well.
I don't disagree that we've got a great crop of compacts.
Civic is strong.
The Chevy Cruze, the drive for that is coming up in a little while.
Right.
I don't disagree with that. The problem, of course, is that everybody's shifting from those to, from compacts to B-segment, subcompact CUVs.
So you kind of think it's the wrong great car for the time?
No. I'm glad we're getting those. We should have had them a long time ago is all I'm saying.
With fuel prices and with the popularity of these small crossovers,
Let's be honest, the new midsize cars are the old midsize size.
Right.
Sure, yeah.
You know, the cars
like
just
pickup trucks,
continue to expand.
I came upon a Civic just driving over here, and as I came up on it, I thought, man, that car looks huge.
Yeah.
It's definitely.
It actually looks bigger than it is because of the styling. But
I had just gotten into a Sentra yesterday. They had a local drive program, and I was really impressed with the back seat. There's lots of room. You know, you would never think it was a compact car. It's just you hop in, and you're like, wow, this is really nice.
And a lot of value for money. That's what I thought
Sentra,
about the Sentra.
I think
made a point of keeping it under $25,000 when others have inched up, you know, closer to $26,000, $27,000. I think that, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there getting their first car that's a lot of car for your buck.
I'd also disagree, though, a bit on the Ford Focus a bit. And that car is getting old. It's going to be replaced within a couple of years.
Right.
But they had a big fail with that dry twin-clutch transmission.
Yes.
And I'd be happy if, everybody bought stick shifts instead, but that's not going to happen. I mean, everybody buys those cars with an automatic. Mm-hmm. And, that was a big fail for them. They never quite got that.
I don't know what is going to happen if there's going to be additional investment in these compact cars when CUVs are going through the roof, especially CUVs built on either compact or subcompact platforms. Mm-hmm. Is the time and money going to be spent on the CUV development, or is it going to be developed on both of them at the same time?
I think Sentra is an aberration because they said that they spent something like three or four times the normal amount they do on a refresh.
Right. Hmm.
Which was very unusual because I think most people are just doing the bare minimum for their compact cars and putting their money into the crossovers.
The key is going to be keeping equipment levels up on the cars and keeping the price well below what you can get across.
And these cars come with everything now, adaptive cruise control. I mean, they're putting radars on them. You've got blind spot detection.
And you'll see the numbers for the top selling models, the Toyota Corolla and the Honda Civic, stay fairly high for a little while. But overall, I think the segment's going to erode in terms of the numbers. So,
Mike Floyd is the best looking editor at Automobile.
Well, I feel that flattery is sometimes a good way to try to get some freelance work, and that's one of the things that I'm going to be working on. I was going to say we have just a couple of minutes. We can talk real briefly about BMW turning 100. I'm not going to say who said it. I'm looking over at Todd. But some people think that BMW has kind of lost its way. Has it?
Well, since you looked over at me, yes, I think it's lost its way. I think they've given in to going after the luxury market more than the sports sedan market, which is what it was built on. I think the 3 and 4 series are not what they used to be. Mm-hmm. And I think, strangely enough, the new Mercedes C-Class, which has never meant to be as sporty as the BMW competition, is probably a better driving car.
I do think that 10 years ago even, that the 3 Series was kind of the best example of that entry-level luxury sports sedan around. And I think
And the buyers
everyone has caught up to that, if not past BMW.
That's the car everybody wanted to build because they sell a lot of them, a huge number. They sell combined, I think, 140 or 150,000 a year, you know, and the margins are great on them. So everybody wanted a car.
120,000 of those are leased in Southern California.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Here's the problem, partly, is as they've gone into the crossovers, they're just like slicing the bologna so thin. There's so many models.
And the new X1, which is based on the Mini platform, in my mind, is a real disappointment.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, the new 7 Series drives smaller than it is. It feels really good on the highway, feels very responsive. And, you know, the new 3 Series, heck, I was able to make another journalist puke driving that. So, you know, I mean, I think they still have something going.
Is that your gauge?
Well, it's one of them, you know. If I can get my co-driver to...
Was that from conversation, or was that from driving? Was that...
I believe it was something having to do with that Copper Canyon thing in Mexico.
Maybe he or she was reacting to the car. You never know.
Yeah. It was early.
So. All right. So I think we're at the point where we can go to a commercial. And so here's a word from our sponsor, Bridgestone Firestone. All right. We have gotten our first phone call in. So if Carmen, you can go ahead and play the phone call, we'd appreciate it.
This is Clem Zurofsky, Delmont, Pennsylvania. Since most of the people on the panel today are ex-writers of magazines, I want to tell you why I quit buying the magazines.
All right.
I'm 80 years old. My eyesight is not as good as it used to be. And now they print white letters on top of the pictures. It's almost impossible for people like me to read these magazines anymore. I used to get 6 or 7 magazines a month. Now I get none because it's almost impossible to read them the way they format them. Thank you.
Well, it's not just old people.
Well, first of all, you know, thank you for calling. Yeah. Plenty of people here. I'm the only X magazine person right now. Alisa and Todd are both at magazines, and Ward's is technically a weekly kind of magazine.
We don't have. It's all online.
Very tiny print.
Second of all, I'm available for magazine on tape series, and if you're interested,
read
I can.
You'll read the magazines.
I will read all of the magazines for a certain fee.
Yeah, does yeah, make yeah. a good point. I mean, in some ways, the design people have taken over the world, and. You know, they look at each other's stuff and they go, oh, doesn't that look cool? I want to do that. And they don't, you know, sometimes it's unreadable.
Two words, art directors. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. I mean, I love them, but sometimes you have to say, you know, in what light do you expect somebody to read this?
Yeah.
So, you know.
Now, I mean, things can be read on tablets where you can make the font bigger. I don't know if that's a solution for our caller or not, but...
Well, that sounds like it is a solution.
I can't say I disagree. I mean, but magazines, of course, the look of the magazine is as important to the powers that be as the words in them. Much to our regret, sometimes. But yes, sometimes the writing does give way to the art of the of the magazine.
So, we don't have a solution for that.
I wish
and,
we did.
You know, magazines.
You start a newsletter, I think.
Yeah.
Which I used to work for one of those too. And
but, I may have to.
Yeah.
He's not the only one though.
I don't know if they do those anymore.
This is from print, and that's our problem. You know, that's one of our problems.
That's a difficulty, and you know, and certainly, I mean, he's 80, so God bless him. He was reading all of those different magazines. And, I mean, for a long time, I thought we just had really bad lighting in our house. And then I got a pair of readers, and I found out it was me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's move on to our next topic. Tesla is fined in Singapore.
Yeah, so who understands this?
Fined for, the way I understand it, fined for high emissions.
Yeah, high emissions
right.
from the
An electric
upstream generation yeah.
right.
that the car needs.
Which presumably they have some coal or whatever they use up there.
I don't know if Singapore is led by Republican trolls or what, because I mean, that's always been one of those vapid arguments against electric cars, which is, well, you know, it's really a coal-fired car. And you're like, well, no, it could also be a solar-powered car.
Yeah.
So that one never really held that
Apparently,
much weight.
That's
with
what they decided in Singapore, though. The poor guy bought the car, brought it there, thought he was going to get a tax credit, and he got a bill.
He got a bill for, like, it was over $10,000 in U.S. dollars. And as I said, he said, there's nothing coming out of my tailpipe. And they said, yes. But you owe us $10,000 because under our formula, we figured out how much electricity you use And then we figured out what it would take to generate that electricity, and here's what you owe us.
So do they tax computers and, you know, laptops and phones and so on? I mean,
you know,
and they have other electric cars, which I don't think were penalized the same way. So there might be something kind of hinky. And Elon, of course, is on it.
Yeah. I would be curious, what is the increase of your electric bill if you own a Tesla and you charge at home? That's one of the things that I'm sure is out there, and I just need to kind of look around. I know for the Volt, because we own a Volt.
I have a Volt.
It's about $40 a month.
Yeah, I'd say.
It is about the increase in our electric bill, which is significantly less than if we were to do that with gasoline.
Right.
And now, where my wife works, they now have a charging station. And so now we figured out a way that, well, you know, that a $40 raise every month.
Yeah.
And so it's one where it's, you know, I think that you probably still save money over gasoline, but I don't think Tesla owners really care what their electric bill is.
No.
They have a person that pays that bill.
Right.
No, but they do care about a $10,000 fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure Tesla's got to be quite concerned because, you know, what does that say to other countries who might go, oh, well, there's a revenue
stream. Yeah, certainly the government of Singapore making a statement. I mean, especially if they didn't do that with other electric cars there, so.
Yeah, we don't know what it is, though. And I tried to look at the equation, and, you know, frankly, I'm a writer.
Math is not our strong suit.
We didn't go into this business because of our math skills.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I'm reinstating the topic because I look at the time, and now I have time to put it back in.
Okay.
I don't know if Elisa can comment on this because this is about the Michigan primaries.
That's right.
I thought
she's an illegal Canadian.
I thought it was really interesting that free trade and those arguments for the Democrats are one of the things that they say propelled Bernie Sanders to victory here, whereas in other places it wasn't.
Right.
We have that TPP that's coming around the corner, though nobody actually knows what's in that. Right. And I don't see them getting rid of NAFTA anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those issues that both Republicans and Democrats can attack from a certain angle. And obviously Sanders saw an opportunity because the NAFTA agreement came under the Clinton administration, the first one, and he's trying to prevent a second one, if you will. So, I mean, that made a pretty good, easy argument. You know, there have been new plants built in, assembly plants built in Mexico that maybe could have been built here, but they're not. So, on the other hand, you still have a lot of local production. You still have, you know, the Germans building cars in the South where there are no unions.
And the Koreans.
And the Koreans and the Japanese.
And everybody, yeah.
And
the Americans said further south of the border.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
It tends to be also a union issue as much as anything else.
Right.
It's interesting that the unions, the UAW, did not endorse either Democratic candidate going into Tuesday's primary.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk about trade pacts, part of the reason people are building in Mexico, in addition to low wages, but an almost larger factor is the fact that Mexico has more trade agreements with other countries than either Canada or the U.S. has. And so they're building in Mexico to send to Europe and Latin America and all these places with no tariffs.
Right.
And the U.S. and Canada they took their hand off the switch and didn't negotiate the same kind of agreements that Mexico just went out there and did.
That would be an argument for things like the TPP, for example, rather than argument against NAFTA. We need more of that, not less of that. The other thing, too, is I think we're probably going to see going forward in terms of auto production in North America that NAFTA should or will follow the European model, and that is that now basically you have the Germans have figured out that they build their luxury cars in Germany, and they build their commodity cars, Volkswagens, and of course, you know, Skodas have always been built in the Czech Republic, but Volkswagens in Central or Eastern Europe in different countries where the labor is a lot less expensive.
Right.
So if you have more margin because it's a luxury car, maybe you can build it closer to your home. I have a feeling we're probably going to see that in the future. A lot of these Mexican plants are for smaller, cheaper cars with very thin margins.
The North American model is what? Trucks and SUVs here, and the commodity cars or the smaller lower margin vehicles outside in Mexico.
And a lot of automakers have come out and said that our strategy is the bigger the vehicle, the higher north it is latitudinally.
That makes sense.
So that's why you're seeing trucks and everything built.
Sure.
Canada doesn't build any small cars at all anymore. They're all just big vehicles. And then even in the U.S., the top half of the U.S., builds trucks and big SUVs, and the further south you go, and then it continues all the way down to Mexico, and that's where you do your subcompact.
And to everyone else's point is that a big plant in Mexico that's churning out subcompacts, a small portion are going back up to the U.S.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The rest are going all over the world.
Yes, and using the trade agreements that Mexico has.
Right, and so, if you want the company to be healthy, It's got to have world trade. It's not just U.S. trade, and they're trying to balance all their numbers as well. And so, because you can't spend $18,000 on a Fiesta and try to sell that overseas somewhere for $16,000 because you can't make up the difference in volume.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a Chrysler worker at the Sterling Heights plant, would you rather be, when they talk about how they're going to shuffle all the plants around and kick out making the small cars anymore in Detroit, and they're going to make Ram pickups? I mean, that's better job security for a worker
up
here.
Well, yes, no. I mean, if we had another
unless there's an oil thing, which most people don't think. I mean, no one expects it to stay this low, but the long-term prospects still sound like gas prices are just never going to be through the roof again.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're going to be more reasonable.
Well, and since we're talking about a little bit of trade stuff, Tweetermeyer has sent in a question to us that is, why are Trump and Clinton attacking Ford and JCI instead of GM and Chrysler? They actually got bailouts and aren't paying taxes. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
Well, not paying taxes?
Well, they are. That's a little bit incorrect. They are paying taxes, but...
Well, Ford got that $5.9 billion DOE money.
Look, I once tried to do a story about who was really Government Motors, who gets the most money.
Right.
All of them are Government Motors.
Right, yeah.
From Tesla to Ford to GM to Volkswagen, anybody that's got a plant in America, Toyota, all of them get lots of kinds of assistance.
You're looking for a state to build a plant. It will get you some
Right. And if you're talking about Trump, let's not pretend that Trump is speaking out of any position of knowledge. I mean, he seemed to only recognize that Ford was moving things to Mexico. And then he tried to take credit for the fact that when some production of commercial vans was moving up here, he said, "See, I did it." But there was a plan that was announced 4 years ago.
Yeah, and
let's not give him too much credit. And it's unfair that he's picking on one company when everyone is following the same business model.
I think that the politicalization of or the polarizing parts of the automotive industry are over. I don't think that they have any legs anymore. There's some people that still get wound up about it. But honestly, I think that it's done.
Again, to your point, and yes, let's just state clearly that we all know that General Motors got a big bailout and they did not return all the money.
Right.
Yep. I thought Hillary said last night in the debate that all the TARP funds had been repaid.
I think she was probably talking about banks because that's been Bernie's
She knows banks
bank.
Better.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the it was in reference banks. To the
well,
whole thing.
They paid
the difference
they
between
had
the
to
banks
pay,
is
but
that.
They never had to pay at all. That was the thing. They were never on the hook for the full amount.
Yeah. Like it or not, regarding GM, I mean, and a lot of the criticism came at the time because of what the Obama administration was pushing GM to do to get through that bankruptcy and get some money out of it. Was that they got GM to reorganize. It's probably something we'd probably like to see happen on, I'd like to see happen on Wall Street, maybe a little bit.
And then one more question just to throw out there for everybody is, what is everybody's take on the recent news that BMW will be selling their electric powertrains to smaller manufacturers? I am not up to speed on this one. I would think it's a good idea.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I mean,
economies of scale.
Right, right. I mean, there are some things that are just really not, they don't distinguish your vehicle. I mean, your electric motors, those kinds of things.
Yeah, if they have the technology.
If they're not a differentiator and you can get more people to have electric vehicles.
Which gets a little bit, which returns back to that discussion of a little while ago about
all of BMW, what's happened to BMW. Yeah. Imagine now that we're heading toward a future where we'll have autonomy. And I'll never forget the an analyst at a conference on autonomy in Ypsilanti last year said, what will the ultimate driving machine drive like when it drives itself?
Right.
Is, you know, once you get to all this electrification and autonomy, how different will a Chevy be from a Ford, from a BMW, from a Mercedes, right, from a whatever?
Yeah. I guess probably the type of champagne in the back.
The type of champagne and how nice is the weather, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Whether it works.
Yeah. And whether
properly.
It has a cinema screen.
No. The thought has crossed my mind, what are all the cops going to do?
Well, there won't be any cops. There'll be automated patrol cars.
Yeah. So, RoboCop.
You know, somebody should take a look at how much money police departments will lose when we go to autonomous cars, because they're all going to follow the speed limit.
Follow the speed
right.
limit.
They're going to do what's right.
Yeah. Right.
Or are car makers responsible for speeding tickets?
Well, Volvo would be, because it says that if an autonomous car gets in an accident, one of its cars, while being driven autonomously, Volvo
is
guilty.
Party.
Yes. And presumably that would apply to speeding as well. As long as you don't tell the car, hey, go more than 5 miles or 10 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Get me, to the show and step on it.
And the flip side of that, of the police issue is, what about infrastructure, to get back to a Bernie Sanders issue, is we already have bad roads in this country. And the autonomous systems won't rely on any one thing. The new Mercedes E-Class, which I drove a couple of weeks ago in Portugal, it will follow a car in a lane on the freeway, and it'll use both that and the lines in the road to determine how to steer itself. And you can hit the turn signal and actually change lanes on its own.
Yeah, yeah.
But so you have a belt and suspenders way of doing it, and you add GPS and so on. You've got at least three or four ways for a car to find its way around the road. But the lane markings are important. The delineation of the road are important. Hitting a pothole, and what will that do to the car steering itself, is important.
Right.
So not only will we, thankfully, I think, lose police department revenue, but on the flip side, while we're already losing road money because of less fuel consumed and taxed, how do we keep those roads in shape so that the lines are good to have that extra
bit of
security?
Those autonomous
vehicles.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, right.
Something that we should.
I interviewed Ralph Nader a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
And a version of that story is available to anyone that would like to contact me. I can.
It has not been posted to you.
I can't publish that for them. Okay. But he had talked about autonomous cars, and he said they're never going to happen. And
really?
He was adamant about that. And I had interviewed him for the 50th anniversary of Safe at Any Speed.
Oh, unsafe.
Unsafe at Any Speed. As a Corvair owner, we call it something different. He was saying that that despite the hype and everything that we hear about all these cars, that there's never going to be an autonomous vehicle on the road. And I mean, do you guys disagree that I know that we have semi-autonomous vehicles, but do you think that there's ever going to be the point where you walk out your front door, your car backs up, gets
I think there will, just because urbanization, congestion. I mean, the world is trudging towards gridlock, and there's just going to be places where this is going to be necessary. It's the only way you're going to have traffic flow smoothly is if you take humans out of it and just have algorithms have all the cars moving.
I can't wait till the intersections are.
But I know, we had dinner with some Continental engineers last night, and they were saying that, it's going to take a long time, because it's the things like the last minute decisions that people make to suddenly cross a lane at the last minute, or a four-way stop where the cars are approaching all roughly at the same time. Now, the computer in a car will know that it got there a millisecond before someone else, but human beings, they often wave someone through. What happens if these cars, you've got a human and a
and there'll be car-to-car communication. Yeah. So they'll be saying, "Oh, okay, no, you go, no,
yeah, you go, you go, you go," and the car is not going to understand that, which is why the Google car finally had an accident and it hit a bus because it didn't recognize.
I think because of the length of the bus, is my understanding. I mean, it started to pull out thinking that, oh, whatever that object is, it passed me. But, no, it's a lot longer than a car.
Something with a trailer
something
like or something.
Yeah. I've ridden in the Google car, not the little Google Mobile, but one of the Lexus RXs.
Yeah.
And, I don't think you can deny the force of Google. I think they're going to power their way through it. B, I think the automakers are holding back because they have to wait for legislatures, for governments to catch up,
insurance and
insurance and all that to catch up. And see, I think you're going to see it happen in urban areas where you've already got some cities have banned traffic for Milan for a period of time, certain parts of London. You're going to see the little Google cars driving themselves. They're going to be electric. They're going to be driving no more than 35 or 40 miles an hour. So a lot of those last-minute decisions won't be really last-minute decisions. And then you're going to see on the highways, the freeways, where there are no
wide-open spaces.
Wide-open spaces, no bicyclists, no pedestrians. Limited you're going access. To have the cars like this Mercedes E-Class. You just amp up the software, and the car will drive along vast portions of Nebraska without you having to touch the wheel.
Yeah, miles and miles of wheat.
You mentioned infrastructure and lines and things like that, something that I've just noticed lately with a couple of semi-autonomous systems, a couple cars, is they pick up that line for the exit lane and will try to follow it. And so the brain hasn't caught up yet to, when the road gets wide, that means I should make the driver take over again. When the lane, instead of trying
tough, I'm in the back seat.
Follow the lane. Well,
one issue is that the GPS is as part of this belt and suspenders kind of system, is that a lot of companies for years have been trying, including I think Google and some of the others, have been trying to convince the U.S. government, the military, to ease up on the GPS restriction. Right. You have this. Right.
Be more not exact.
It's not exactly pinpoint because of security issues. Yeah. And do you have those security issues anymore?
I also had a car that was, I had a destination in it. I did not take the exit, and it actually was shutting down, slowing down on the freeway because I didn't take the exit.
The car was?
Yeah. So, there's some learning here still, but I think it'll...
So you
we'll
were driving it, it was steering itself at this
I was
point?
I was doing as much autonomous, ACC on, letting it steer, but I kept it, I didn't want that exit. So I stayed on the freeway, and it was like all of a sudden it was braking, it was slowing down, it thought I was on the ramp. And I was in the middle of a 70-mile-an-hour lane. So this is some learning that's got to happen.
Now the next step, though, conversely, is that on this Mercedes E-Class launch, and by the way, I'll give a little plug. You can see the videos. Go ahead and give your plug. See the videos at automobilemag.com of the E-Class in Portugal, where Mercedes had set up a little garage and set up some parking areas and where the car will pull itself out of the parking out of the garage, and if you're searching for a space, say a perpendicular space, I guess it works parallel as well.
Yeah.
It'll find that space. You can get out of the car, use your iPhone or your smartphone, and have it back in or pull into the space.
Dial it into there.
Ready to go in Europe, not ready to go here. They're hoping to get the clearance from NHTSA within a year or so.
So you need to go back to the last sign. This one's troubling. please. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, Carmen is telling me from the control room that we're running low on time. One thing I did want to talk about is FCA outsourcing Dart and 200 as those vehicles are going away.
Right. Well, Sergio has said that he doesn't want to make them anymore because he doesn't make money on them. He wants a partner to do it. Asked him in Geneva about that last week and, whether or not he sees anything on the horizon, or will he just exit them altogether? And he said that he is actively talking with partners right now and thinks that he's going to find a solution. But he's been very upfront about the fact that he doesn't make money doing those cars. He wants to make the pickups and things, and
trucks
so he
and
just
Jeeps.
Wants
again.
So it's not that right. Yeah. So it's not that he doesn't want to sell those anymore. He just wants someone else to contract manufacture it for him.
And I'm really glad you asked that question, because that's the way I wrote it up when he first said that. I said they will not build a next generation Dodge Dart or Chrysler 200.
Right, but they still want to offer it. Yes,
I would suggest to him that they only need one of those two cars for one thing, and right. probably the Dart, because the Dart's on the large side of the compact scale.
Yeah.
And the Chrysler 200's never caught on.
The prevailing wisdom used to be that you can't be a full-line automaker if you did not have a midsize sedan. And I realize we're trending to a crossover world, but it really has been historically such a big segment. I just wonder what it says about you if you are not playing in that space.
Historically, but it's already given away to the compact
midsize,
CUVs.
Compact CUVs.
And although this plan is murky now because of the problems with the Alpha rear-wheel drive platform, the Dodge Charger, the next one, was supposed to become a midsize car, rear-wheel drive. If you're not going to sell a lot of them anyway, you have a car in that segment, and you say, okay, we offer it with rear-wheel drive, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of last questions. Elisa may be able to answer this one, which is from a guest on the AutoLine Live thingamajig where they ask questions. What about FCA dealer shift to combine with Dodge dealers? Dealers Todd can answer this.
Fiat dealers can now combine with Fiat stores in the same stores as Chrysler.
Is that a bad sign for Fiat, or is that a good sign for Fiat?
I think it's a good sign for Fiat.
Right, but for the dealer who invested all this money to have a standalone Fiat structure and has been given no vehicles to sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do have to think about these guys and their livelihoods.
Yeah, they were all losing. What was the report that, you know, they were selling maybe 10 cars a month and
some dealerships
were losing.
Maybe the Pope can't even save Fiat in America.
Right.
Well, a couple of years ago, they were actually doing not that bad in terms of volume. They were starting to catch Mini in terms of volume. But those cars were never as costly as Minis, and again, getting back to the paper thin margins on them, and that's got to be the big.
And they were also promised Alphas too. I mean, they were supposed to invest in this, start with Fiats, and then get Alphas. And of course, you know, it's taking a while to get the Alphas out there. The other thing Sergio said last week is that we have not delayed investment in Alpha. He said we've just delayed introducing the products that are the fruit of that investment.
Yeah.
His argument is that it wasn't until a couple of years ago that they finally pinned down the architecture they wanted to use. So now that they've gone ahead and they've got the architecture and the powertrains, that the top hats is really the easy and least expensive part, and they've only delayed that. But you should not confuse that with Alpha not investing in its future altogether.
So that's not a good sign.
I just passed that on as his explanation.
And that's not a good sign, as you know, when you've invested a lot of money in something new and you're not selling it yet. You're not selling it on schedule.
He blames a lot of it on China. They've changed export tariffs, and so they've been backing out of China.
Well, but the Alphas haven't rolled out as quickly here as they were supposed to, I think.
No, But they're not going to, I guess, invest the money if they can't also sell it in China right now.
So, Carmen, do we have any rapid-fire calls?
Nope.
I would be able to hear, but I don't have an earpiece. we do have one last question from Mike Ma, and it's, aren't all VW diesel engines functioning as they were designed, which means there is no real fix because they were designed to cheat, as the only viable way might be to remove the turbocharger or lower the boost so the emissions won't suffer? Does anybody understand the technicality?
The only real way is to add SCR to every one of these cars.
Well, that would be, yes.
I mean, that's...
That's a very prohibitively expensive.
Very expensive on inexpensive
cars. Even more expensive to add it into an existing diesel powertrain
right. than to build it in.
Right. Yeah. And there could be space issues getting more hardware into these cars.
Right. Yeah, there's not a lot of space.
So buying them back is probably cheaper than doing SCR. So I don't know if the solution.
So, Mike, I don't know if we're answering your question or not. I think it's a little more complex than just.
My understanding is this. So the understanding is that, yes, you kind of detune the engine so that you get poor performance. And the NVH isn't as good. You get better emissions, poor performance as a trade-off. Yeah. You might lose fuel mileage, I guess. But,
yeah, you would.
We thought that Volkswagen would be able to do that, since the cheater software, presumably at some point, the emissions meet the regs when the cheater software kicks in, when the car is running in a straight line at a certain speed. But now CARB, the California Air Resources Board, is saying that we don't think Volkswagen can fix these to the point that it will meet emissions, that even if they do that, it will be compromised. So they must be somewhere in there, in between there. And now the question is, well, do you take the hit and then and you've got better emissions but still not meet the standard? I think that's kind of what the CARB, the director who said that was trying to say, that, you know, we're going to have to compromise on this. It's better than having him spew out the NOx that it's spewing out now. That's my understanding.
It could come to the point where in California that they won't allow those cars to be registered, you know, at the current pace, if they're saying it's not happening. And then Volkswagen, they're going to be stuck buying them all back.
Yeah. Exactly. And
selling them where? In Alabama, Mississippi, somewhere?
Michigan?
Return them to Mexico in the case of the Jettas. That's where they came from.
Right.
Use those free trade agreements. Ship them to...
Exactly.
It's a true
NAFTA car. Yeah. I forgot what the math was, but when the story first broke in September, there were stories saying that EPA could charge Volkswagen, I don't know how many billions of dollars, a lot.
It was like $18 billion.
I think it was actually a price per car. And you think about it, and the price per car that EPA could charge, I think it was in the 30s, so it was higher than what your average, even your Jetta or Golf diesel would cost, which would be probably under 30 mostly. Mm-hmm. So it, in the end, it may
be
best
cheaper
for them to buy it back.
Either that or...
That half a million of them. Fortunately for them, there are not that many sold in this country.
Lower Saxony becomes a territory of the U.S., I guess, right?
Well, we've hit the one-hour mark. We've ended with what we started with, which was VW, and covered a bunch of stuff in between. My apologies to Matt Damon. We didn't have time to bring him on tonight. But Elisa Pirtle with Motor Trend, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.
Bob Gritziger with Wards, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing me along.
And Todd Lasso with Automobile. Thank you once again.
Scott, always good to see you. Thanks for having me on.
Anyway, everybody, thank you very much for watching. Thanks for your questions, and I hope you enjoyed the show. John or Gary or somebody will be back next week. I'm available for bar mitzvahs, birthdays. I can do dog walking, a number of other things.
Sell hair.
And, as my last sign pointed out, I will sell my hair to the right person for the right price. And I'm supposed to promote next week's show, but I need the other thing on the iPad.
Okay.
So I apologize. Oh, this is part of the show close. And don't forget, next week, we'll have not only the head of Domino's USA in the studio, but also the coolest, most badass Chevy Sonic that you've ever seen, known as the DXP. It is the only car sold with a pizza oven. So please tune in next week.
Cross out.
Scott, I thought your
right
car
in
had a pizza oven.
Pizza oven.
My car comes with pizza. It doesn't come with a pizza oven.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires. Your journey, our passion.